All right, let's call the Senate Transportation Committee to order. Let the record reflect that it is 1:34 p.m. Tuesday, May 3rd. Present today, we have Senator Michicki, Senator Keel, and myself, Chair Myers, which gives us a quorum to conduct business. Staff in the committee today is Nancy Hemingway from Senate Records, as always. Doug has joined us as our moderator today, and Michaela Anderson is my committee aide. At this time, we're going to start off by hearing HB 166, the single license plate per vehicle. By Representative McCabe. This is our first time hearing the bill. We are going to hear from the bill sponsor, take public testimony. My intent is to move the bill from committee today. With that, I'd like to welcome Representative McCabe to the table to present the bill and respond to questions.
Thank you, Senator. And good afternoon, Chair Myers and Vice Chair Schauer, who is not here, and members of the Senate Transportation Committee. Thanks for hearing HB 166. Just had to get that in for Dozer. For the record, I'm Kevin McCabe, representative for House District 8 in Big Lake. With me, I have my staff, Angela Steffel, and Julia Morris is on Teams, I believe. Julie Morris on Teams. Julie will be available to walk committee members through the sectional if requested. HB 166 simply seems to reduce the number of vehicle plates from two plates to one. It brings Alaska to line with many other states, 20, I believe, at this point, and there are others that are contemplating this. Nebraska and Iowa, in fact. Washington allows for an exemption if there is no way to affix a front plate. So manufacturers of many new gas-powered vehicles don't provide a location to put a plate on the front bumpers. New safety technology present on the front grills of modern cars, which can be obstructed and damaged by attempts to install the plate, are becoming more and more prevalent, especially in self-driving cars, Teslas, and that sort of thing. So removing the front plate maintains a car's health by allowing the designed airflow to occur. It allows the sensors to do what the sensors do. It also protects the aesthetic contours of the vehicle, which is very important to some of the classic car guys. Most electric vehicles, I don't know if you know or not, they've eliminated the front grille. And as I said, the lane change technology and the radar technology to prevent you from running over a bicycle or something that you don't see when you pull your car out of the garage. All those fit in the bumper, and drilling into your bumper creates an issue with those, especially if you have to put on an aftermarket plate holder. The single plate registration tab will still be required on the rear of the vehicle, and it will still continue to assist public safety officers in their work. The rear plate registration tab will remain visible to the human eye. Body cams, dashboard cams, security cameras, and other personal video systems will still work. One of the things I did when I was contemplating this bill is I actually drove from Big Lake to Anchorage, and I counted the number of vehicles that didn't have a front plate, and about 1 in 10 didn't have one, or it was obscured by mud, or was dangling. You can't see it at night. It's not lighted. You can't read it in the mirror. If it's close enough to read, typically it's below the horizon line of your rear a hood or your tailgate, so it's kind of rendered ineffective. It is a fix-it ticket. It generates no revenue for us. DPS reports one citation in 2018, one in 2019, five in 2020, nine in 2021, right after I introduced the bill, I think, and one in 2022. So if it's not enforced, then let's save some money in the production and distribution of these plates if you consider the change to, say, mail plates out to a village or that sort of thing. This doesn't affect the program. It doesn't affect the service. It doesn't affect jobs. This is a contract that DMV has with the license plate maker. Fairbanks, Wasilla, Palmer, and the troopers have all no position on the bill. It will not put their officers in harm's way, and they said that they will work with it. We did talk to a trooper in Ohio, which is the last state before us to do this. She sat on the side of the road and called us on Teams. It was kind of a fun conversation. But she insisted, the lieutenant with their troopers, that there was no impact to Ohio troopers in any manner. It didn't impact her job or her troopers' jobs in any way. So in my consideration, it's a small bite at the budget apple. It's an efficiency that we can provide, and I think it's a common sense change. Most of my constituents realize that we're not going to get big, huge budget cuts, but we might be able to find some efficiencies. I think this is one of those. I think in its true nature, it's a budget bill, as I may have said before. So that's my initial presentation, and I can answer any questions the committee may have, or Julie Morris can go through the sectional if you like. I also have DMV and DPS here for support and questions, and I understand we might have an amendment. The amendment maker and I have discussed that. I'm in favor of that for when we get to it. So.
Thank you, Representative McCabe. Let's go ahead and go through the sectional, and then we'll do questions.
Okay, thank you.
So with that, I believe we're going for Julie Morris on the phone. If you could put yourself on the record, give us your location as well, and proceed with the sectional.
Good afternoon, Chair Myers. Can you hear me okay?
Hear you great.
Okay, very good. For the record, I'm Julie Morris. I'm calling in from Anderson, Alaska. I'm staff to Representative McCabe, and I'll walk through the sectional of HB 166 for you. Very quickly, sections 1 through 5 and 7 through 10 amends AS 2810, sections 108 through 44.1 to grammatically conform to singular plate or registration language. Section 6 adds a subsection to AS 2810, 161, that provides an individual or organization the option to return a plate should they be issued two plates. And Section 11 outlines an immediate effective date. This concludes the sectional for HB 166. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Morris. With that, do we have questions for the sponsor or staff? Senator Michiki.
What if you happen to have a really cool old pickup and you want two plates so they match?
So this makes provision for that. You can actually call. You can order a second plate. I think the cost is around $5. So you could order a second plate, similar to ordering a personalized plate. Like yours could say Senate Prez on it or something on both of them, and you could order something like that, or you could order two plates with the regular numbers. It'd probably take a little bit longer is what I figure, but yes, it makes provisions for that. So,
okay. Well, mine wouldn't say that, but I appreciate the suggestion. Thank you.
Senator Keel?
Oh, no, Mr. Chairman, I was just going to say that I already reserved that plate.
Okay. Any other questions? Pretty straightforward. All right. With that, we'll go ahead and go to public testimony on HB 166. My apologies. With that, we'll open public testimony. Is there anyone in the room wishing to testify on HB 166? Seeing none, going online. It looks like we don't have anybody testifying on HB 166, so I will close public testimony. With that, if we do have any other questions, we do have people on board from the troopers, from DMV, and from Director of Commercial Vehicles from DOT, if there are any other questions. Seeing none, moving forward. Moving on to the amendment process. We've got one amendment coming out of my office, and I will go ahead and move amendment number 1. Labeled B.4.
I'll object for discussion.
Thank you, Senator Michiki. So what amendment number 1 does is pretty straightforward. We were taking a look at how this affects commercial vehicles. Don't have any problem in my mind moving to a single plate for a commercial vehicle. As Representative McCabe noted, often your front plate is obscured with mud or snow or something anyway. Well, on a commercial vehicle, let me just say from personal experience, it's the back plate that gets obscured. Don't have any problem there, but the issue is the location. As you pull into a scale or other particular, or possibly a mobile stop, the commercial motor vehicle enforcement is out there checking your front plate, excuse me, to log you into their computer system. So we got a hold of DOT and asked them about having it on the front rather than the back. They said that they preferred it on the front. So that is what this amendment is attempting to accomplish.
I'll remove my objection.
Before, can you place your objection back on, please?
Yes, we can complicate the amendment. I will put my objective back on the record.
Thank you, Senator Mushiki. Andy Mills, if you wouldn't mind coming forward. So we put the amendment together, and we had DOT contact us just this morning that we did need to make a small conforming change to it. So just going to have to make a small conceptual amendment. So I'm going to move conceptual amendment 1 to amendment 1.
I'll object just so we know what the conceptual amendment is.
Okay, thank you. So the conceptual amendment is on the amendment starting on line 14, going down to line 20, where we're defining commercial vehicle. It's going to define it as commercial motor vehicle per AS 1910-399. And the reason for that is we had forgotten that there are actually two definitions of commercial vehicle in statute. One is the commercial vehicle definition here, which refers to trucks, buses, etc. The other definition of commercial vehicle is elsewhere and has to do with whether or not you are using it for a commercial purpose. We were simply aiming for the commercial vehicle in terms of the definition and size and things that are regulated. Senator Mushiki.
Yeah, I have a question. So commercial motor vehicle excludes trailers, I assume.
It depends on the size of the trailer. If your trailer weight is over 10,000 pounds, then it would be a commercial vehicle.
Okay, just for another question, how do you affix a front license plate to a commercial trailer?
I'm going to call on Mr. Mills here, and if he's got it, if he needs his lifeline, he's got Dan Smith on it.
For the record, Andy Mills, Legislative Liaison for the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities. Through the chair, Senator Mushiki, the trailer plate would be on the back, but the commercial vehicle towing it, the plate would be on the front. So if there was only one plate, the concern here was that the plate not be on the back in between the trailer. The trailer itself is usually affixed on the back of that, but Director Smith on the line can certainly speak to how they can get out and do, I think, a manual inspection if that's not the case. But for the purposes of the amendment, we did put forward that commercial motor vehicle was a commercial vehicle that's not like, as Director Smith explained to me, a flower truck. Like this is for commercial vehicles that are on scales versus smaller commercial vehicles conducting business.
And when we sent the language to Ledge Legal, we did mention the trailer issue specifically. So I believe that trailer is already covered elsewhere in statute since they only get one plate anyway, as it is. So, all righty. Seeing no further questions, do you maintain your objection to the conceptual amendment?
I will remove my objection to the conceptual amendment.
Okay, so conceptual amendment 1 is adopted. Any other questions or discussion on amendment number 1 as amended? Seeing none, Senator Mushiki.
I will remove my objection to amendment number 1 as amended.
Thank you. So amendment number 1 as amended is adopted. Any further amendments? Seeing none, Senator Mushiki.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move House Bill 166, Work Order 32-LS0403/Bravo as amended with individual recommendations and forthcoming revised fiscal notes.
Seeing no objection, HB 166 moves from committee with recommended amendments and forthcoming fiscal notes. Ledge Legal is directed to make any changes or deletions to the suggested language, including technical conforming or bill title changes to accomplish the intent of any conceptual amendments to the bill. We'll take a brief at ease to complete the paperwork. All right, Senate Transportation back on the record. Moving on to the next area of business on our agenda today, we're bringing back up SB 170, the Alaska Marine Highway System Corporation. And we're going to start in on the amendment process. With that, take it away, Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move amendment number one, which is labeled from Legal Services W.5.
And I will object for purposes of discussion.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This amendment keeps the major projects of the Alaska Marine Highway System, especially the boats and vessels, in the 1% for Art program. A proud part of Alaska's tradition, a proud part of the Marine Highway System's tradition. Public art is a good for, well, just that, for the general public, whether it's Alaskans or visitors. It is beneficial to our economy. Alaskan artists and artisans bid on and do the work for these projects, and they make the public spaces where people spend time in transit better places to be. They're opportunities to educate visitors about Alaska, our cultural history, our artwork, etc. With that, I know that we have a lot to get through, so this just leaves them in the existing program.
All right, Senator Machiki.
Well, I just have a question for the maker of the amendment. People talk about the average civilization, or not civilization, I'd say republic, lasting for about 200 years, and a percentage of the state's revenues has been directed toward the arts since the ancient Greeks and Romans, which both failed in that approximate time frame. Do you think you're creating additional risk for the state or the country by following that track?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate that the question. But my understanding is that while the Roman Republic did not fund public art, and that in fact it relied only on the ultra wealthy patrons. Whereas when Rome entered its imperial period, there was public funding for the arts. I think that the Senate President has it exactly backwards. We're in a safe spot here.
Well, I'm going to be a little less esoteric in my question. So I was looking over the current language of that statute that section that we're trying to change, and I could not for the life of me figure out if the Alaska Railroad and their engines and cars are covered by the 1% for art. It's been a long time since I rode on the railroad to remember in person. Do you know if the railroad is covered by the 1% for art?
Mr. Chairman, I do not. I can't answer that question. I could try to filibuster it, but I don't have the answer.
All righty. would kind of like the answer to that question before we pass that amendment. Just curious to see how one corporation deals with that section.
Happy to bring it back later if that's the preference.
Okay. With that, if you don't mind, would you mind we roll that one to the bottom?
Mr. Chairman, that works for me.
Okay.
And I'll have a question on that amendment as well. Does that add to a fiscal note, or is it subtract from? So if you think about a $40 million vessel, I don't know what a vessel costs of the larger ones, but does that subtract from other installations on a vessel, or does it add to the cost? So if you think about the cost of a vessel, does it... Mm-hmm. When you go out for bid, is that 1% included in that ultimate price of construction?
Mr. Chairman, it is my understanding, and we can bring back the precise details, is that it is 1% of total project cost.
Okay, which, if memory serves, I think in previous conversation we talked about the Testamina replacement vessel being something along the lines of $250 million. And so that'd be... 1% is a significant chunk of change there. So I think that's probably where a little bit of the consternation is sitting. But all right, so we're going to roll amendment number one to the bottom. Moving on to amendment number two, Senator Keel.
Mr. Chairman, I move amendment number two, labeled W.6.
And I will object for purposes of discussion.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This one does match the Alaska Railroad Corporation statutes, which designate the railroad as an essential government function of the state. This would bring the same language into the Marine Highway System corporation statute.
Okay. And seeing no further questions, I'm going to remove my objection on this amendment. Seeing no further objection, amendment number two passes. With that, on to number three, labeled W.7, Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move amendment three.
And I will object for purposes of discussion.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The bill, as came before the committee, had a disparate treatment of the two commissioners. One could designate someone to serve on the board for them, the other could not. And this amendment treats the two commissioners the same, specifically by not allowing the DOT commissioner to select a designee. Both commissioners would need to serve directly on the board. And I decided to go that way with this amendment, specifically because of the need we've discussed in this bill to have DOT fully engaged with the corporation. The bill, of course, puts the corporation in commerce. They've got to coordinate on the STIP. They've got to coordinate on the whole intermodal transportation structure of the state. And so involving DOT at the highest level, I think, is valuable.
Okay, thank you. Any other comment? I'm a little torn on this one. So I guess the question I'm going to ask is part of the concept of the bill of putting the Marine Highway System into a corporation is to put a little distance between the Marine Highway System and DOT. Now, we don't want too much distance between the two because we still want the ferries to mesh with the roads, etc. And that is when we're putting together the STIP and things like that. That's going to still be a balancing act. But if the point is distance, why not keep it at distance by allowing a designee?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. These are fine-grained distinctions. I think that the designee is almost, if we were to allow a designee, it would almost certainly be a deputy commissioner or a division director, a political appointee, someone who is in the exempt service and serves at the pleasure of the governor. And so I don't think that we meaningfully increase the distance with that designee language. But I think we do potentially meaningfully increase the integration with the department by having the top official of the department.
Okay. With that, I will remove my objection to amendment number three. Seeing no further objection, amendment three passes. Moving to amendment number four, W.8, Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move amendment four.
And I will object for discussion.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So what amendment four does is specify that there must be one union member, one representative of a union on the board. This matches the Marine Highway Operations Board that we passed, the bill we passed out of this committee last year. And so it just ensures that one member of that board represents a union that covers the employees of the corporation.
Okay, thank you. I will say for myself that I am comfortable having a member of the union that is a current employee on the board. I believe that it's often good to get some of that feedback from the actual operations from the bottom up, somebody that understands what is happening at the ground level, so to speak. I'm a little leery of giving a board seat not to an employee of the corporation, but instead to a representative of the union who is not a current employee and represents a different set of interests in my mind. to be put on the board. You know, quite often we've got, you know, adversarial relationships in there in terms of contract negotiations and things like that. And to me, putting the union representative directly onto the board creates some very interesting conflicts of interest, and I'm not really very comfortable with that.
If I may?
Yep.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So the language here does not does not specify that it cannot be a current employee. Although I think that's probably the better practice. You have a difficult dynamic when there's a current employee who is one of the people who oversees the head of the system to whom the current employee reports. That gets a little weird. Nevertheless, this language is not so prescriptive that it would absolutely require that it be a union rep who is not in the employ of the corporation. I think what you said about someone who is closely connected to the line workers and the folks who sail the ships and run the terminals and all the things that need to happen is really the key here. If you have a representative who is a union official rather than a current employee, you have someone who's accountable to the employees in their service on the board. But again, this language, as I read it, would leave both options open.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Michicki.
Thank you. The way I read this is that it says that one of the members appointed under B3 of this section shall be a representative of a union that represents employees of the corporation, but it seems to run into, so G allows not more than one, but H does not allow a current state employee during the member's term. So if we were to pass F, it doesn't, H still does not allow a current state employee. So it could be a past representative of a union.
Mr. Chairman, the Senator Michicki is correct. I stand corrected on that. That is, in fact, the way that H interacts with this. You could have a former employee. Thank you for that correction, Senator Michicki. But fundamentally, what the point of the amendment is to require that there be one, that there be at least one union rep.
So I have a question for the department or someone that might know this answer, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. We've got Captain Falvey's on board, or we've got Mr. Mills from DOT here as well.
Well, whomever wants to answer, can you be a union rep that is not an employee, state employee?
Captain Falvey, can you hear us?
Maybe muted.
Are you muted, sir? Captain Falvey?
Oh, I'm sorry. Yep. Captain Falvey here. Yes, I was muted. I apologize. Yes, for the record, Captain John Falvey, General Manager, West Green Highway System, through the chair. I believe Senator Michicki. I believe the question was, can a union official and not be an employee of the Marine Highway System? Was that the question?
Yeah, the language is representative of a union that represents employees of the corporation. Can a representative of a union that represents employees of the corporation not be a current state employee?
Yes. Yes, they have... all three of the unions have management representation that are technically speaking not members, you know, sailing out on the line on the ships. Yes.
Okay, I stand corrected on my assumption then. I mean, I think it'd be really handy to have past employees on a board, which we allow under the current language. This could actually be someone who may or may not have experience in all of the other 1 through 6 in F. Could just move here to be a union representative and may not give us the experience that we're looking for on this board. So I'm hesitant to support that. I don't have anything against unions or employees. But this could be anyone that happens to be a union representative.
All righty. With that, I'm going to go ahead and maintain my objection for this for this amendment. So, Madam Secretary, if you would call the roll, please.
Senator Keel.
Yes.
No.
Senator Myers?
No.
One yay, two
nays. All right. With one yay and two nays, amendment number four fails. With that, we're going to move on to amendment number five from Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And actually, this may get to a piece of what Senator Machiku was talking about. I move amendment five, labeled W.9.
And I will object for purposes of discussion.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. What this does is... take from that subsection G the limitation on the number of former members of a union who could be on the board. And so, you know, the goal here is to broaden the pool. It maintains the restriction, not more than one member appointed by the governor may be a current member of a union whose employees work for the corporation. By removing the restriction on former members, you open up the possibility of someone who sailed a couple of seasons on the Marine Highway System when they were young and went off and worked in the private sector and became a, you know, head of some organization, obtained the skills that we're looking for, right? And wants to come back and serve. But because once upon a time they were a member of the union, they would be barred from the board if there were already any other union member. So, well, that's what it does.
Okay.
All right. I was going to keep arguing. I realized I'd said what the thing does.
Well, I'd say that's a fair point that somebody who uses the Marine Highway System as a way to get into marine operations as a business and then has moved on could definitely be a valuable addition to the board potentially in terms of the skill sets that they may have developed since then. So I can definitely sympathize with where this one's going.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, and I frankly, I'd like to have employees involved since the vast majority of them are union members. If they're not former members and not former employees, I think the satisfying 1 through 6 has probably a pretty high probability, and I think it'd be really valuable information to have or a valuable perspective to have on the board.
All right. With that, I'm going to go ahead and remove my objection to amendment number 5. There we go. Seeing no further objection, amendment number 5 passes. Moving on to amendment number 6.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move amendment number 6, W.10.
And I will object for purposes of discussion.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is a slight adjustment in the relationship between the board and the executive team. With this amendment, the board appoints the CEO and the CFO, and it is to them to hire and fire the rest of the employees of the corporation, rather than have the board get down further into the hiring and firing of individual members of the leadership team. So that general structure gives the board the time and the authority to focus on the strategic management, the vision and the leadership, and not to run the corp day to day.
All right. I will say that I have not been really involved in a corporate structure myself, but I am sympathetic to the concept of a unified executive. So definitely understand that. With that, I will go ahead and remove my objection to amendment number 6. Seeing no further objection. Amendment number 6 passes. Moving on to amendment number 7.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move amendment 7, W.11.
And I will object for purposes of discussion.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is a slight loosening of how much direct board involvement needs to be in specific capital projects. So the bill as written says the board has to get involved when the price tag of anything gets to $500,001. In conversations about the bill and including with Senator Machicki, the amendment raises that to $5 million. So the CEO would be able, the management team would be able to re-roof a terminal or do a some significant annual service work on a vessel, but you couldn't buy something new. You couldn't build something brand new out of this. Major projects, including the periodic overhauls, would all need board approval still.
All right. Thank you, Senator Keel. I will just say that, that the initial draft of the bill, we had $500,000 in there. One of the major considerations into what we put into the bill in total had to do with just accepting getting public buy-in, making sure that, that you know, because the ferry system has been a point of contention over the last few years, that, that we wanted to make sure that the public understood that we weren't going too far, that we weren't going to be removing too much oversight from the board and the corporation. And so we started with a relatively low number. That the initial bill that this was based on, if I remember off the top of my head, it was actually $50,000 rather than $500,000. So if people are comfortable with it, I'm happy to raise the number to $5 million. So
thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think what you have to look at here is it a number that could counter the direction of the board? So say the board decided that there was a particular port that did not require the replacement of the reef on a terminal because they were going to start going from regular operation to a quarterly vessel, and they wanted to put their investment dollars elsewhere. Is $5 million the right number that kind of allows the management to decide, I don't care what the board thinks, we're going to sink so much into this particular terminal that it, they're going to be sort of stuck moving forward? So there's a number where that can occur. I think $5 million's high. I'm comfortable going above $500,000. But $5 million for that purpose, of course, not for vessel replacement or other things, that's nothing. But for that purpose, that number could cause the leadership team, the employees, to sort of work against the board. And we are focused on a board-led executive team-operated board. I wish I had a little bit more experience on what that number might be, but I will move a conceptual amendment to amendment number 7 for the purposes of agreement, and that is a $2 million number.
All right. I'll object just for discussion purposes. Senator Keel, what's your reaction?
Mr. Chairman, this isn't a magic line. There isn't a perfect number here. I think the conversation's been exactly what we're trying to get at. And both of you said it well. Generally, I think management teams that spend money opposite the strategic direction of the board are replaced soon. But I appreciate that there's a desire to keep a little bit closer lid on that. And so I have no objection to $2 million.
Okay. I have no objection either. So I will remove my objection to the conceptual amendment. Going from $5 million to $2 million. All right. With that, we're back to the Amendment 7 as amended. Is there any further comment? Seeing none, I'll go ahead and remove my objection to Amendment 7 as amended. And seeing no further objection, it passes. All right. Moving on to Amendment number 8. Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move Amendment 8, labeled W.12.
And I will object for purposes of discussion.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This removes one extra rationale for executive sessions where the board could do business closed to the public. And from the bill, which specifically it says they can have executive sessions about the corporation's acquisition or disposal of assets. And I think that we probably, as we look into what's allowed under the Administrative Procedures Act now, I think we probably don't ultimately need this. You can already have an executive session to open bids, to negotiate on a negotiable contract. Those are things that are covered and permissible. And so I think the only thing that the risk we run by including the language is that the board could have conversations about whether to buy a new vessel, whether to dispose of a vessel or a terminal or a major facility out of public view. And so I think the existing language of the Administrative Procedures Act covers anything with the fiscal implications that we're worried about. When it comes to the bigger strategic pictures, we want them to have those conversations in public.
Okay. Senator Machicki.
So let's think about the accepting the purchase of the recent building that we did with the legislature. The vote had to be public. When we came back on the record, there could certainly be discussion about the vote, but there could be potentially sensitive competitive discussions about acquisitions and disposal of assets that you might, again, remember, this board follows when they can't vote in executive session. Seems like it would be healthy, like any other organization, including the legislature, that you could talk about some of the potential competitive details of acquisitions or disposal of assets, and then come back on the record, which would be required for a vote. I'm a little worried about not being able to discuss some of those details that could be compromising someone's competitive position in public.
So, to that point, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Keel.
I wish I had brought the language from the Administrative Procedures Act, but I know that you can have an executive session to discuss matters the immediate knowledge of which could have a detrimental impact or a negative impact on the finances of a government agency. So I think if it really gets into competitive position type stuff, we could, I suppose, open the Open Meetings Act, couldn't we? I think that is covered, and certainly I know it's been a long time since the senator was in municipal government, but municipal governments use that provision from time to time when it's appropriate to look at those competitive questions, those questions of the exact price tag. To evaluate competing offers.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Machicki. I'd
be interested to see the language, but the finances of a political subdivision, it seems, wouldn't satisfy the need for the finances of two competing private entities. So say you're purchasing a dock from a large company and they have another offer from another private entity, but the state decides that that terminal is more valuable to the state. That might be, you wouldn't necessarily be protecting the state's financial information. You might be protecting the other competitor's financial information. That's where my concern lies, unless someone can point me to the act that may maintain my objection.
One.
Can we take a brief at ease?
Brief at ease. All right, back on the record. So I had a concern as well. One thing that I'm looking at is the incentives for the board or for the chief executive officer. If you have to dispose or acquire your assets in public, would that tend to give an incentive for leasing rather than purchasing? Because leasing then isn't a disposal or acquisition. And if you're just talking about a contract, that would still be allowed to be under executive session, which is what a lease would be. But then if you needed to end the lease, you would be able to do that in executive session as well without having to do it on the record, because then it wouldn't be a disposal of an asset. Eric Gill.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I think the short answer is no. Under the Open Meetings Act, I may have used the wrong name before, but under the Open Meetings Act, your broad strokes discussions have to be public. But when you get into the nitty-gritty, you can shut the door because of the exception that says you can have an executive session to discuss matters, the immediate knowledge of which would clearly have an adverse effect on the finances of the public entity. So if you can open bids or consider competing offers, those are matters, the immediate knowledge of which, right, if one competitor knows the other's bid, would have an impact on the finances of the public entity. If you have to disclose trade secrets to have the conversation, nobody will do business with you. That affects your finances. So you need to be able to shut the door, and you can. The specific terms of a purchase, the specific terms of a lease contract, whatever that is, those can be done with the door shut. You have to set the general strategy and the general direction in public. You have to take your final votes, of course, in public and on the record. I think the existing reasons that we have for open executive sessions are generally let the business get done, and they let public entities work with private sector bidders and contractors and lessors of all kinds pretty darned well.
All right. Let me try to be a little bit clearer, because I felt like we talked past each other. We kind of missed something there. Kind of what I'm thinking about here is you say on the record, all right, we want to expand service to a new community. There's economic activity. The community's grown. We want to expand service there. To do so, we need a facility. We can either go into executive session and pick a lessee, or we can do it in public and buy property and construct a dock. I'm a little concerned that by allowing the lessee discussion to happen in private and the other one to happen in public, that we automatically prejudice the discussion in one direction.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I mean, in that scenario, you still have to go out and advertise for potential lessors, right? You still have to do something public and put it out and solicit offers. So there is still that public discussion of going out to get the thing, whether that's a thing you're going to lease or a thing you're going to buy. And then once you get to the details of who you're working with and how much and the exact for how long, that you can shut the door for.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, there's a reason this is in this bill. Can we ask the department if they know why this is in the bill and maybe give us an example of where we might want to leave the corporation's acquisition or disposal of assets in the executive session?
All right. Yep. Captain Falvey, are you still on board?
Yes, Captain Falvey is on board.
Thank you, sir. If you could help enlighten the discussion a little bit here, what currently happens if you're talking about acquisition or disposal of assets? Is that currently held in public, or is that done under executive session? And which, what is your opinion on which way we go with that?
Through the chair, Mr. Chairman. Well, I think we have procurement rules and regulations that we follow. With let's say for example. When we sold the Fast Ferries, there was procurement rules of engagement that we followed in selling those assets. So, and that is established. So that's, and in the case of the Fast Ferries, that's what we did there.
Yes, when those were pushed out, though, that was that something that was conducted under the Administrative Procedure Act. Openly, or was that something that was more of an internal discussion that would be closer to an executive session?
Captain Falvey, Mr. Chairman, we went through a sealed bidding process, and that was done privately.
Okay, thank you.
Yes.
All right. Any other questions?
Okay. No, Mr. Chairman, just the delta being that right now it's an executive branch agency. So accountability is straight line to the governor, whereas here we'd have a board. And so we have the Open Meetings Act apply.
Okay. I think on this one, I'm going to go ahead and maintain my objection to amendment number 8. So, Madam Secretary, if you could call the roll.
Senator Keel.
Yes.
No.
No. All right. So that was amendment number 8. Moving on to amendment number 9. Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move amendment number 9, labeled W.13.
And I will object for purposes of discussion.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So this gets into the section on the general powers of the corporation. And it deletes one that has, I think, some awkward implications. At page 17, lines 19 and 21, wants the corporation to establish routes and schedules and types of service, et cetera. What this would do is delete the requirement that each sailing show anticipated incremental revenues that meet or exceed all its incremental costs. And so with that requirement in place, I think the system doesn't have the flexibility to have some runs that do very well and some runs that don't do as well. You would need to balance the incremental costs and revenues of every single sailing to be able to vary the size, shape, and configuration of the vessel and the crew. Even within serving the same two ports at different times of year. So it's a little overly prescriptive for the general goal of trying to get the system to recover its costs.
Thank you, Senator Keel. I will say that when we put the bill together again, you know, some of the point of it, of course, is to get the Marine Highway System to function more like a business. And so this was some language that I thought was useful along those lines. As we've done more research over the last few months talking to DOT and finding out what their costs actually are, I can see your point that if they're going to expand that, especially in the early stages, that they probably would not be breaking even. And knowing that we're talking about the assurance contract and it's going to have that dynamic with the legislature as well, that I can see how this would be hamstringing from any potential changes or expansions of service. So can definitely understand that. Okay. All right. With that, I will remove my objection to amendment number 9. Seeing no further objection, amendment 9 passes. Moving on to amendment number 10. Also Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move Amendment 10, labeled W.14.
And I will object for purposes of discussion.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just offer this one as a tidy up amendment to remove a section that I think is repetitive. The section that this deletes would be where it says that the corporation can enter into agreements to subcontract out delivery of services. If you look at the previous page, at page 17 on line 24, you can see the corporation has broad discretion to enter into contracts and leases, other agreements, carriers, shippers, other persons related to all the services, activities, operations, property, vessels. It goes on for a while there. So they have the ability to contract out their services already, and so I just offer that as a tidy up.
Okay. My initial thought is, you know, one thing I've learned in my short time here is it's better to be clearer in statute than muddier, even if it makes it a little bit more awkward in the reading. And well, I seem to remember some conversation previously from a couple of groups that were concerned about, you know, subcontracting out an entire route or something like that. I don't think that's going to be a significant problem, but at this a significant danger. What I see out of this a little bit more is, well, we've kind of seen a little bit of it come from the ferry system over the last couple of years. Vessel breaks down, they can't complete the runs, so they find Allen Marine and Gold Belt and a couple of others and subcontract out and say, hey, can you run this for us for a couple of months until we can get something back in service? And you know, obviously that's been very useful. Otherwise, you'd have communities cut off for months at a time. Even if it's duplicative, I'd be inclined to leave it there just to keep us just to make sure that it's explicit. Is my theory on that one. So,
Mr. Chairman, I don't think it's duplicative. The other sections talk about. Contracts, leases, and other agreements with connecting carriers, shippers, and other persons related to the services. I think this clarifies that as this organization fights for the survival of adequate service of the Alaska Marine Highway System, that some of the decisions they may make is a separate subcontract agreement to deliver similar services, and I don't see that. So I think it's important that that line remains. I don't like that it says some subcontract out. I could amend the amendment to just remove the word out, but I probably won't do that to the sponsor of the amendment. He probably wouldn't think that was very funny. So, but I maintain my objection. If you were to remove your objection, I would still object to amendment number 10.
Okay. Senator Keel.
Mr. Chairman, yeah, I think that the ability to contract or agree with any other person, that includes a corporate person, related to the activities, operations of the corporation. It's plenty broad, but I so firmly believe this is duplicative that it's also not particularly harmful to leave it in, so I'll withdraw Amendment 10.
Okay. All right, so Amendment 10 is withdrawn. All right, with that, moving on to number 11.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move Amendment 11, which is W.15.
And I will object for purposes of discussion.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I have, I think you've all got a copy as we started here, an amendment to Amendment 11. And I think it says Conceptual Amendment 1 to Amendment W.15. So I will offer... I move Conceptual Amendment 1 to Amendment 11, W.15.
And I will object for discussion and description of the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was trying to clean up what I thought was a requirement for duplicate audits, and we did more research, and we did more talking with people, and my First Amendment doesn't work. So this tidies it up. What this will do is just what we generally expect of our public corporations. They'll go get an audit. Ledge Audit will review that outside audit, but they don't perform their own unless we call for a special, right? Which this statute doesn't talk about. We have other statutes for that. So that is the effect of the amendment is to have one audit. It's done by an outside auditor. Ledge Audit reviews it under the usual terms, just like everybody else.
Okay. So let's see. Available for examination. Oh, okay. So then the line would read, the corporation shall make available, shall make all of its financial records available for examination by the Legislative Audit Division. Okay. Just had to get that. All right. Sounds fine to me. I will go ahead and remove, while I will say that after 230 years or so of constitutional government, the First Amendment's working just fine. But I will go ahead and withdraw my objection to the conceptual amendment. And that brings us back to amendment number 10 as amended, which is now significantly different. 11, excuse me. Thank you. Is there further discussion on the amendment now as amended? Seeing none, I will go ahead and remove my objection to amendment number 11. And seeing no further objection, passes as amended. Okay.
I would brief at ease.
Brief at ease. Back on the record. Moving on to amendment number 12. Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move amendment 12, labeled W.16.
All righty, and I will object for purposes of discussion.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. this adds one limitation to the statute that would come to be on the corporation's sale of property that it no longer needs. And you can see the new section there, the corporation may not sell a dock or terminal unless the legislature approves the action by law. So this was very comparable to statutes that the Alaska Railroad has, and it makes sure that the legislature is able to either approve or stop the system from completely ending service to a community or divesting itself entirely of the infrastructure it needs to end service to a community, because this is such an important part of the total Alaska transportation system. It also, just as a side note, it mitigates some of the concerns that I had about the corporation's ability to create partially owned subsidiaries, which appears elsewhere in the bill. With this restriction, this amendment, we no longer have the concern that somebody else might effectively sell off the state's assets through a partially owned subsidiary where the corporation is a minority partner.
Okay. Well, I'll say my one concern with this one is similar to concern I had a couple amendments ago. It seems to me to provide an incentive to lease rather than to buy. If you expand service into an area, it gives you an incentive to say, well, we can back out if we lease it, but we can't back out if we buy and build a terminal. And I mean, I have to think that not in every case, but in a lot of cases, buying may be the better option financially, but if you've got an incentive to say, well, we can't back out of it without the legislature doing something, then that concerns me that makes it more likely that they're going to stick with the lease, even if it's going to cost them a little more money. I just worry about the incentives at the bottom of what that creates for the board.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Michicki.
Are we either going to have some faith in the board or not? I think it's counter to, and I don't, there's no wrong opinions. Well, there are some wrong opinions, but there aren't many at this table. The very reason for selling a dock or terminal may be because the board decides they can't afford more than two voyages a year, and Bob's Coastal Ferry Service may come on and I'll do it weekly. And they say, okay, you're going to pick up the whole operation. We'll feed into either end. But this may actually work for a much higher level of service for someone that can bring the cost down for a private entity. But my bottom line is we're either going to have faith in this board or we're not, in this public corporation or we're not. And I think this takes this puts it in the hands of a powerful legislator that might be in the right slot that really likes the color of a terminal in one of their favorite communities, and that individual may be working against the best interest of his constituents because they could get a higher level of service if it went private. So I don't want anyone to think that I want to see the system sold off, but I do believe that an effective board will deliver a higher level of service to certain communities that are marginal today. I think this amendment works against that, so I can't support it.
Okay. Senator Keel?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I mean, the place that Senator Michicki and I agree is that if I think a functional board will deliver higher levels of service in a lot of places. we have a mix of state-owned and state-leased terminals now, right? And the state has, especially at some of our very most marginal ports and our most farthest out ports, we have agreements where we use existing docks, right, that a municipality might own. And so I don't think that this terribly throws off the mix, but where we have facilities where the state of Alaska has spent a whole bunch of you know, U.S. taxpayer dollars through the STIP and state dollars, Alaskans' dollars through state match. But before we divest of those, before we sell them off, I think a check is reasonable. And I think what we've seen with the railroad coming in with various things where they need to get approval is that they come in and make a lot of business sense, and the legislature has a tendency to say, okay, that works. I think certainly in the last 4 years, I haven't seen any fail to pass. So I think it's just a reasonable check.
Okay. All right. Well, I'm going to go ahead and maintain my objection. So, Madam Secretary, would you call the roll, please?
Senator Michicki.
No.
No.
Yes.
All right. So amendment with one yay and two nays, amendment 12 fails. Next up, we're moving to amendment number 13. Okay. With that, Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move amendment 13, labeled W.17.
And I will object for purposes of discussion.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We talked about this in a previous hearing on the bill. This would allow the corporation to purchase privately owned land. It does not create a right of eminent domain. The bill has been very careful not to do that. This amendment does not change that. But I think the ability to actually just buy from a willing seller privately owned land is one part of the mix, getting the terminals right, getting the upland portion correct. So that's Amendment 13.
Thank you, Senator Keel. So I will say that this is just a slight oversight as we were putting together the different places where you might want to put a terminal. We thought about putting one in Washington, putting one in Canada. Thought you might get a piece of land from the state it already owns, and completely forgot about the fact that you might buy a piece of land that's privately owned. So I believe this corrects a little bit of an oversight in the bill.
Just a question for the maker of the amendment on page 23, line 16. What is your goal? Which you're removing the first or?
Correct, Mr. Chairman. Just delete the first or, and we'll put a new or after the sub three, so that the or is between the third and fourth points of the list.
The or deletion is just a grammatical issue. It's the second portion of the.
Yeah, there were two ors in line 16, so it was a little confusing for me.
Oh, I see.
That is a good point.
That is true. I missed that too.
Mr. Chairman, to be clear, that amendment refers to the second or, the one after the semicolon.
Although I'd imagine one of these boats, it takes more than two ors to move on. But sorry. All right. With that, I will remove my objection to Amendment 13. Seeing no further objection, Amendment 13 passes. Moving on to, it's probably going to be the last one just for timing's sake. Moving on to Amendment 14.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We had a very, I move Amendment 14 labeled W.18.
And I will object for purposes of discussion.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We had a fairly similar conversation on direct sale of a dock or terminal. This would go into the land exchange portion and also require legislative approval to dispose of the dock or terminal in a land exchange. Same basic principles.
Okay. With that, let's see. I mean, I believe Senator Michicki's point on the previous amendment stands on this one as well. To some extent that I can understand the trepidation of not wanting to make it too easy for the board to end a service or to significantly reduce a service, but at the same time, part of the point here is that we have to get some of the tough decision making out of the hands of the lawmakers who have a little bit different set of incentives than what we hope are a set of businessmen, more or less. And in large part, we have to trust the board, and especially if some other opportunity arises, and that concerns me a little bit.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As Ronald Reagan said, trust but verify.
Fair point. I'll go ahead and maintain my objection for Amendment 14. And Madam Secretary, if you could call the roll for Amendment 14.
Senator Bishop, absent. Senator Michicki?
No.
Senator Keel?
Yes.
Senator Schauer, absent. Senator Myers?
No.
One yea, two nays.
All right. One yea, two nays. Amendment 14 fails. I think we've got time for one more. Here we'll do Amendment 15.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move Amendment 15, which is labeled W.19.
And I will object for purposes of discussion.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So this clears up an ambiguity in the fidelity bond. The current language says the corporation may obtain a fidelity bond to cover board members and executive officers. And then it says the bond must be in effect during the entire tenure in office of the bonded person. So this switches from may to shall. And so it is both internally consistent. Shall get a fidelity bond on your board members and execs who cover money, and shall maintain it throughout their tenure. And then in addition to being internally consistent, it's just good, safe business. The board members and the folks who are responsible for the money at the corporation, if there is malfeasance or misfeasance that might get to the point of somebody going back to a bond, with a corporation this size, that's not money that the individual has, right? You can sue them, they're bankrupt. So we protect the corporation with that fidelity bond.
I also seem to remember a conversation we had outside of committee that you noted that that's also required for the railroad.
If Mr. Chairman, that is correct.
Okay. All righty. All right. Well, makes sense. And since we're already doing it for the one, it makes sense to do it for the other, especially given the high dollar value of the assets that we're talking about here. So I'm going to go ahead and remove my objection to amendment. Okay, which one are we on? Amendment 15. Seeing no further objection, amendment 15 passes. With that, we have made it approximately halfway through the amendments, just slightly over halfway through the amendments that we've had. We're going to be bringing this back up again on Thursday, and we're getting close to the end of our time today. So thank you, everybody, for the good discussions and a bit of a slog going through such a large bill. So appreciate the committee's effort and patience in that.
Chairman.
Senator Machicki.
Before you adjourn, I think the senator brings up some very good points, and each one of them I have to kind of weigh in my head, what do we want this to look like? And I think about the railroad right now. The railroad's going through, in some parts of the state, a little bit of a public relations issue. And when they want to do something that goes to the legislature, either folks that believe or support those that feel that there's an issue, or those that are susceptible to running from negativity that may or may not have an actual issue attached to it, it makes it more difficult for the railroad to get their business done. And I just wonder, do we want to start that way? If we truly want it to be a quasi-independent corporation, I think it's... I think we start with the right framework, and if we see any of those things being abused over time and it not being as effective as it can be under this structure, then we start thinking about pinching back. But so I just want you to know that I appreciate your thoughts on this. We just may disagree on how we want the corporation to go out of the gate. We probably don't agree on how we want it to function over the long term.
All righty. With that, thank you, Senator Machicki. With that, we're going to go ahead and close my papers before I should have. With that, we're going to go ahead and adjourn for now. We're going to go ahead and hold the bill in committee and resume the amendment process on Thursday. That meeting is going to be Thursday, May 5th. And with that, we are adjourned at 2:55 p.m. Thank you.